Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge. 91.3, and it's Voice of the Cape's face-to-face section. And in studio, we have a very special guest. She is a filmmaker. Her name is Nadine Clutty. She's done some very interesting documentaries. The one that I've got here is called Jitsvanger, Mark It An. I don't know whether I pronounce that correctly or not. She's also done one other, not one other, but one that really strikes the fancy as Miseducation. And this is a documentary that was noticed by the New York Times. So Nadine is not a Mickey Mouse documentary filmmaker. She's currently doing work on something called Action Commandant, and it's a story, a documentary about Ashley Creel, who was one of the stalwarts of the struggle on the Cape Flats. And as we all know, Ashley Creel came to an absolutely tragic end. And as I said yesterday on air, there just isn't enough disclosure about all these things that have happened under the cloud of apartheid. But in studio is Nadine Clutty herself. Nadine, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here.
Now, I'm quite curious. I mean, I'm very glad, and I think hundreds and thousands of people are glad that the Ashley Creel story is going to be told. But what motivated you to start production on Action Commandant?
I think what first inspired me was I was working as an intern at a company called Rainbow Circle Films, and Rainbow Circle Films have produced a documentary on Anton Franz as well as Colleen Williams. So they had a lot of archive material on their computers, and as an intern, I came across these archives, and I'd always, you know, heard the name Ashley Creel. My dad, being a history teacher, would tell me things, I wasn't familiar with what he looked like, what he sounded like. And when I saw that archive footage, it just, something there just really struck me. And I felt like I wanted to discover who this person was, who he was as a person, you know. Because, you know, I knew growing up that this was somebody who had given all for our liberation. But I wanted to know, who was he, you know.
Yes. And of course, I mean, I'm sure the footage you've been able to see, and I'm sure the footage you're putting together, I'm sure you'll agree that people like Ashley Creel, Anton Franz, all those people, they had a certain magnetism, a certain charisma about them, didn't it? I mean, you could see that these were young leaders in the making.
Definitely. I mean, that's what struck me. I mean, I also saw archive footage of Anton Franz just dancing on the stage, and but they used their magnetism, you know, they used their charm to draw more people into the mass movement.
And of course, it was hugely significant. Now, your Action Commandant documentary, you know, to make docus, it costs money, doesn't it?
Yes.
And like most documentaries in South Africa, it's not easy. You've managed to get some under the belt, but this one, it was becoming difficult, wasn't it? And then I do know, at a certain juncture, you made an appeal and somebody actually came to help you.
Yes.
A knight on a white horse came galloping into center stage.
Yeah, now, I mean, the production has been very blessed. I mean, what happened was the National Film and Video Foundation had given funds, but then the archive, the last thing I had to deal with was a copyright of archive material. And then that archive material is owned by a production company, or a company in Britain, in UK, and they were charging me in US dollars for this. So then the last of the National Film and Video Foundation budget to the project went to that, and then I was stuck because, you know, the film was now, so to say, complete, but we needed to audio mix, color grade, copyright on still a few photographs. I was really in a panic state, and I'm not somebody that really likes to, you know, put myself out there, but I think I just, you know, encouraged by friends and other comrades of Ashley to do it, to put it out there and launch a public appeal.
And I believe the Dr. Iqbal Server of the Independent Newspaper Group came along to the party.
Yes, he did. I mean, at such a critical time as well, you know, because you, the nature of the documentary being what it is, it just deserves to be the best. I don't want to, I want the audience to have the best viewing experience possible. So these funds will make that possible.
How far are you at the moment? I mean, it sounds like you are way down the road. I mean, are you at the stage now, the critical stage, which is the editing stage, where you've got to match the sound to image, and as you say, the color thing, the complicated technical side of it.
Yeah, so now, you know, in terms of narrative, I think we've locked our narrative, locked the narrative, and now it's more of these technical things that need to happen.
What sort of style are you going to be using for this doc? Because often documentaries become effective, for example, if they're shot in black and white, if certain sequences are played in slow motion, music sounds very, very important. Mm. What elements have you brought in that we can look forward to without giving too much away?
Well, I think we treat the archive really differently because I wanted it to be an experience where the audience, so that the, you know, that archives aren't just these images that we cut away to. I'm hoping that people see the archives and feel that they are really there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my aim with the archives. Well, as the interviews, you know, those who have seen a preview of the film have said that the interviews are really, really personal. So what I like, if I may say, about the film is that it's not...
You're allowed to like it.
Thanks. That it's not these politicians speaking or people that have an agenda. It's people that are speaking really from a personal, humane space. And I think that's the strength of the film.
Who are the people that you managed to talk to? Was it prominent people or was it family members? How did you go about that side of it?
So, yeah, at first, obviously, we went about getting, you know, permission from the family to tell the story. Then I think the first, one of the first people I interviewed was Dr. David Klatzer, who's also been in the news lately. And from there, I interviewed some people that were in Ashley's MK unit, or his very first MK unit in Bontyville. And then a lot of people that he grew up with in Bontyville. Also a prominent person who's in the documentary is, you know, Ashley was part of this little, street group called GAP, which was a name made up of the first letters of his friends. And so, you know, something like that is also in the documentary. Yeah.
I mean, what is also interesting, I'm glad you've mentioned the word Bontyhevel because, you know, in the mid-80s, people forget the role that the people of Bontyhevel played in the anti-apartheid struggle.
Yeah.
Now everybody, all they can talk about is gangsters. But there was some very real political awareness that actually came from the Cape Flats, and I'm glad you're doing this documentary because we seem to have forgotten that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Bontyhevel was actually the first... township in Cape Town to be inspired by 1976 youth uprisings in Soweto.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just Bontyhevel. In fact, you know, this Christopher Truter who was killed in 76 by, you know, a stray bullet during a protest. So Bontyhevel has a long history of freedom fighters and, you know.
Yeah, and let's hope in a sense that this documentary reminds people that here's a legacy that... I would editorialize and say it needs to actually to be protected and to be remembered because this is actually heritage, isn't it?
No, definitely. I mean, that's one of the reasons for doing the film.
Now, when you started shooting and you've got all the stuff together now, how much imagery, how much material were you able to get of Ashley in person himself? I know this is the most difficult part of it, isn't it? To get the personality of Ashley Creel as Ashley Creel into the narrative. How were you able to do that?
I mean, there's photos of him are very scarce, rare. There's the Jimmy Matthews footage of him addressing a crowd in the Bontyhevel Civic Center. That's kind of all we have of visual... like moving pictures of him. We also have what I'm quite excited about is actually singing. There's some audio of him singing. You know, there's a human element again. We only have a few photographs of Jimmy Matthews stuff and Ashley singing. We have used animation in the film simply because of the lack of archive footage. Yeah.
In fact, it's quite sad in a sense that Ashley became more famous in the media sense after his death and before his death, although before his death he was playing a hugely significant role, but I suppose because of the nature of the anti-apartheid struggle, you couldn't really put yourself out there because if you put yourself out there, you were going to go inside a prison.
Exactly. And that's also, you know, one of the reasons he went for training in the Umkhonto Sizwe camp.
Now, when it comes to how they got him in 1987. Warrant Officer Benzian, part of the whole deal. As with so many of these incidences where people were allegedly killed because they were fighting the apartheid police, whoever it was, it's now starting to turn out that a lot of these people were actually set up in a sense. I mean, you made a point off air, and a lot of people have asked this question. Why didn't they just go and detain Ashley Krill and put him into jail like other detainees and interrogate him, which would have been the normal pattern? But here it's different, almost like they're showboating. I don't know what's the right word to use. What comes out of the documentary in this sense, that there are questions that there's been no disclosure?
I mean, what I do in the film, is the best, you know, the best that I could do in the film was interview Dr. Klatso, interview the family's version of events, and really place that on a pedestal, because their version of events, and I think Klatso's version of events, hasn't been treated, you know, as like that. So I the film, it has a big emphasis on Ashley's life and who he was and what he tried to accomplish. And when it comes to his death, we really go with the family versions of events, because for me that was the important part.
Now, David Klatso is a well-known forensic scientist. He's not like CSI. he does a real job. It doesn't happen in sequence like in the movies, but. It seems like he's got some huge questions about how Ashley Krill died, and the police version doesn't seem to match up with evidence.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like you said in the paper, and you'll see in the film, there's things about the holes in Ashley's clothing, for example. Holes are a different size depending on whether you've shot close range or far range, and Klatso had some findings around that. And and also the fact that actually you can see in Klatso's photos once again, he was handcuffed. He was handcuffed already when he was shot.
Now, that's a mystery, isn't it?
Yeah.
And how can a handcuffed person pick up a gun and start firing it? It's beyond belief,
It's very bizarre. Unfortunately, the film, it cannot answer those questions, but it does raise them, and perhaps that's important to do as well.
In fact, I mean, I'm sure anybody, when they see the documentary, will agree with that. Obviously, you aren't in a position to draw any conclusions because the conclusions simply aren't out there. And I'm sure you're hoping that the documentary will open these questions, in the sense that we do find serious disclosure and to allay the suspicions that I and many other people have who followed the TRC and who followed Benzian's career very closely, is that we are beginning to suspect that the man was lying to the TRC.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, right? But just looking at Klatso's version of events, like, the reason why I feel he's trustworthy is because he wasn't a comrade. He doesn't have any agenda. He's someone who's looking at facts.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
And Klatso, as you say, is asking the serious questions that, you know, I mean, it's not, you don't handcuff a corpse.
Fact, on the photographs, you can see blood around the wrists. So, I think it was a much bigger and longer struggle than what was reported at the TRC.
No, absolutely. Now, Nadine, when can we look forward to this documentary coming? This is always the big question, because I know it's like a baby and you don't want to let it go, because there's always improvements to be made.
Yeah, I feel like I can go on to the editing forever, interviewing forever, but I am hoping that it will be ready by June this year. Yeah.
And do you have any potential buyers? Are you going to be taking it to the festivals?
Yeah, the plan is festival releases. No lockdown dates yet, but I think June, it looks like June is going to be the month for the first local screenings to start happening.
And when you say local screenings, are you going to be showing it in sort of halls or whatever? Are you going to take that route?
Yeah, I think, because it's been funded by the National Film and Video Foundation, for them it would be important to try the festival route first, but I do feel it's important to have a screening in Bontevil. So maybe after the first festival, the first community screening can happen in Bontevil.
No, that certainly would be very exciting.
Yeah.
Are you confident that the national broadcaster, for example, is going to take it up, or is that you're just hoping for that? Crossing fingers and hoping.
Crossing fingers and hoping. I mean, there are conversations going on, so we'll see.
Well, yeah. Jimmy Matthews' footage is in it. He's got a vested interest in approving it.
Yeah. Maybe that came fast-track things, I don't know.
Right. And how many minutes is the documentary going to be?
Currently it's sitting at 90 minutes. Yeah.
90 minutes. That's a huge undertaking.
I think it might be just a little longer because when we launched the crowd campaign, I said everybody that contributes is going to be credited as an executive producer. So I think our credit list is going to be very long.
Right.
Maybe 92 minutes. People should just sit there and watch the credit list go up.
No, of course. I mean, you know, a lot of people helped with the project, and one has to definitely honor that, their commitment
definitely,
as well,
definitely.
To make sure that the truth is out.
Yes, I mean, the thanks goes out to those who, not just those who contributed financially, but emotionally as well, and even people that, I mean, in this last week, people have been calling me, telling me their experiences with Ashley. That is something that I am very honored to experience.
Yeah. Are you going to have a lot of what they, I suppose you could call it, outtakes? You know, often when people make docies, they actually have another file, as it were, of stuff that they weren't able to put in, but becomes very useful archival stuff that can be used.
Yeah, definitely, because look, the film is 90 minutes. I interviewed plenty of people, and each interview was 1 or 2 hours, you know.
Right.
Each hour being so precious. So I am throwing around a few ideas of what to do with those interviews, whether I transcribe them and make those transcriptions available online for, you know, study academics or high school learners. Because the information, because when I did interviews, we weren't just speaking about Ashley, but also the period, you know.
Right.
So it could be interesting.
So there's a lot to come out of it. Nadine Clutty, a filmmaker based in Cape Town, watch out for Action Commandant. It's a documentary about Ashley Creel from Bontehierville. You can't afford to miss it. And at Voice of the Cape, we'll keep you informed as to when it comes out. Nadine Clutty, well done. It's almost there.
Awesome.
And in June, we can't wait to see Action Commandant, the documentary about Ashley Creel. Thanks for chatting to
us. Thank you very much for having me.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the coast.